Welcome to Modern Digital Applications, a podcast for corporate decision makers and executives looking to create or extend their digital business with the help of modern applications, processes, and software strategy. Now, welcome your host, a recognized industry thought leader in cloud computing and published author, bringing over 30 years of experience, Lee Acheson.
July 9th, 2018 was the launch of a podcast episode. It was an episode of the Modern Software Podcast, a podcast sponsored by New Relic and hosted by New Relic's Frederick Paul and Tori Wilt. This particular episode was titled The Great Serverless Debate. It was a debate between myself and a good friend of mine, Clay Smith. Clay and I were guests on this show. While in comparison to most modern political debates, this debate was very mild. Clay and I really agreed on more things than we disagreed on. But it was a great episode that had lots of great views and opinions on the state of serverless currently, and in the future. In 2018, serverless was just coming into its own, and the hype curve was in full swing. In that episode, Clay and I talked about our views on the world of serverless and where it would be in 2020. That episode was a huge success, and I still get asked questions about it today. If you haven't listened to it, I strongly recommend you have a listen. A link to the episode is contained in the show notes. It seemed to me that it was time for an update of that debate. A redux, if you will. Since New Relic's Modern Software Podcast isn't active right now, I thought I would take on the challenge myself and host a redo of the great debate based on what we know about serverless in 2020. So I called Clay, and he was more than happy to join in. So on February 21st, 2020, Clay and I got together for an update to our views on the world of serverless. This episode is a result of that meeting. Welcome to the Great Serverless Debate, Redux. This is the second part of the two-part interview with special guest Clay Smith and the Great Serverless Debate, Redux.
It seems like, at least in the ideal world, or what they're kind of pushing, I mean, AWS and others, is that you can move faster. And I think the broader serverless definition, like Aurora, like you were just talking about, it really gets to that nicely. And I think that's always been the exciting thing about it as well, for me as a lazy developer, at least.
That actually brings up I was going to go in a different direction, but just based on what you said, let's stay that for a second. Let's talk about the lazy developer model. And that is, one of the things that people talk about is serverless, is Lambda, is functions as a service, that side of the serverless equation. We could probably expand it to be the larger serverless question too, but is that better for the lazy developer or better for the lazy operations or both?
that's a great question.
And we're not talking the word lazy as a derogative term here. We're talking from the standpoint of reducing workload, reducing the amount of things you have to think about.
Yeah, of course. I would say that I would say that potentially if it's developer-led and you don't loop in the operations team, it could be a huge mess for the operations team. I think it could be something that definitely complicates the life of operators if they're not involved from the start of onboarding an organization to serverless patterns. And a big part of that isn't because, people aren't good at their job or anything. I think it's just that there's still a lot of management overhead for this stuff, different policies and access controls. So I think one issue that still definitely exists that serverless functions are limited. So you can only have so many concurrent functions executing at the same time in a given AWS account. Well, if you have 10 teams sharing an account and then one team, is doing some load testing, then they exhaust the available functions in the account and then everything stops. So if not done carefully, to answer your question, I think it can make operators' lives really difficult. But if done well, it's both, hopefully.
Yeah. You're right. I've always been to the mindset that just like cloud adoption, serverless adoption really is something that needs to be driven from the operations organization to be shown as a value to the development organization. So the development organization obviously cares about it, but I think if it's not driven through operations, then like you say, it can be a major problem for the operations organization. But an operations organization can build the mindset of serverless and the mindset of cloud, and do that in a way that benefits development. But I don't think the reverse is true. I think if development leads that, it often will be at the expense of operations, and that can often be a problem. And DevOps, of course, completely muddies that whole situation. But
And speaking of DevOps, so one of my greatest disappointments around functions of service the past 2 years is the DevOps kind of pipeline, continuous integration story, kind of the workflows to build and deploy these sorts of solutions is still a total mess. Yep. And that's one thing I've heard from everybody that's trying to bring these things to production. It just takes a massive amount of time to get that supporting DevOps infrastructure in place.
Yeah, when they first came out, that was my number one concern with Lambda, was how are we going to deal with them operationally and deployments and those sorts of things. And yeah, some things have gotten better, but it is, we're still operating the way we were operating, 5 years ago or longer, with the tooling that's available here. It's just, it isn't yet to the level that it needs to be in order to be a true partner in the operations or the DevOps organizations. It just isn't there yet. There are a lot of people that are trying, but no one's really figured out how to do it yet.
Yeah, it just seems like it requires a major investment in terms of people and time to get that set up where you can be really successful.
The other piece that I think is missing too is the architecture support. Because, as we know, when you move from monolith to services, you're not decreasing the complexity, you're moving the complexity. You're moving it out of the services and moving it into the interaction between the services. And that's, in general, considered good, and it is good. But, when you're talking from a microservice standpoint, still the complexity of the interactions between services is something that's still manageable. But when you look at Lambda, it gets even worse, right? The interaction between Lambdas in order to make an application that does real work is significant. It's huge. And there aren't tools yet, and there needs to be tools because of the complexity involved. There are not tools yet that make that management of that complexity between the interactions between scripts reasonable. And that's another area, along with the deployment side, the DevOps side, that's another area I think where, there needs to be a higher level of maturity in the tooling available than currently exists.
Yeah, I completely agreed. And it's my understanding that a number of companies with very talented engineers are working on that problem right now.
Yep.
Completely agreed. It seems like that there are some organizations that are very successful in figuring that sort of stuff out, that it's still a lot of work, but the only thing I saw recently on Twitter, which was who knows whether it was made up or not, but it was, someone was talking about this policy instituted in an IT organization of the company where any workload that required an EC2 server had to get approval. So it was a matter of policy that everything had to be a managed service. So any, pick your favorite 200 AWS services, but if you had to spin up an EC2 service, special approval needed.
Wow. Yeah, that's I understand the mindset behind that, but it scares the heck out of me to be thinking that those sorts of policies are going to be driving architectural decisions. You know, I mean, you know, one of the comments you made 2 years ago, it's a quote that I took out of the initial episode, and I just want to repeat it here because I loved it. It actually kind of set in my mind some very specific thought patterns about serverless in general. And that was, I'm just quoting from the show notes from that last episode, is you said this: instead of buying some sort of enterprise storage box for $500,000, now you just use S3. Instead of the resource-heavy model of, quote, well, I'm going to buy storage to compute, end quote, maybe you're just going to use Amazon API Gateway and integrate with a third-party software-as-a-service tool like Twilio if you want to notify your customers. Maybe the wild card is, am I going to move to serverless or containers? Maybe the wild card is, do I even need to run this code myself anymore, or can I just buy it off the shelf? And the really what that's saying, you know, that's the glue view of serverless or of functions as a service. But what it's really saying is kind of supporting what you're saying with that one customer use case is, if I have to build something that runs on a server, I've lost. But if I can find a service that's doing it for me, and all I have to do is glue these pieces together, I've won. Now, that's a mindset. That's a thought process. And obviously, that company you're talking about, that's basically their thought process. And, you know, that's a world different view than the way enterprise used to think, right? I mean, if you go back, you know, even just 10 years ago, but let's even go a little bit further back than that, you know, the idea that, you know, software as a service is a no-no, right? You don't use another person's service. You don't send data to a third party. You know, data's got to stay with us. We don't do anything with a third party. And the idea that all you have to do is glue all these pieces together and you've got a working application was unheard of, but now it's normal practice. And it's, you know, things like Lambda really play well into that model.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that worldview, I see, at least in some cases, it getting more acceptance because I think a lot of these large enterprises look at some new digital experience they want to build. They look at the teams they have. They look at the tools and, you know, workflows they have. Some of them are probably already in the cloud, maybe a lift and shift sort of situation. And then they realize, you know what? We don't have the people or tools or processes to build this the way we've done it the past 15 years. It'll take 3 years and it'll cost $12 million, or we'll have to hire consultants that'll cost double that to do it for us. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's just the reality check of how much faster, if you do it right, you can move by with that approach that's pushing some people in that direction.
Yeah. Yep. We said in 2018, Fred, who was the host of that podcast, the Frednator, if we remember him, he ended with this statement or with this question: where do you think the state of serverless will be in 2020? And this is 2020. So let's look at our answers. So Clay, your answer was public cloud customer will weigh all their options for net new. The number of times you can say, I'm going to use serverless for this is over 50%. Do you think that's true? Has that come true? Has that come true?
No. Yeah. I think it's true for some organizations. That's for on average across every public cloud customer, that's not the case.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we're nowhere near that number yet, but it's, but yeah, it is. Honestly, when I heard you say that, I thought, yeah, there's no way is it going to be anywhere near that. But I think it's greater now than I ever thought it would be. I thought by now it would have gone over its hype and been done, and it's not. So I think we were both kind of wrong in that area.
Yeah, I definitely think it's still trending in that direction. I think more and more people are realizing they can use a managed service or FaaS as the glue code to do something. Yep. But yeah, it's not at 50%, except at a few organizations, possibly.
My answer to that question was this. I agree with Clay, but I think the question is the type of serverless. serverless will be prevalent, but that's not necessarily going to mean functions as a service. I think there will be a whiplash impact on functions as a service, and people will move back to using servers more often than not. But serverless services like S3 and containers as a service will grow and dominate the serverless market. You know, I still think that's going to be true, but it hasn't happened yet. So obviously I was way off on the time frame, and there hasn't been the whiplash yet. And I don't know when it will occur, but I think it still is coming. And obviously, containers, as I mentioned earlier, the containers as a service model, I think Fargate disappointed there, and it didn't turn into that. And so that hasn't been the level of growth that I would have wanted it to be. And I still think that's an opportunity. And hello, AWS, if you're listening, I think there's an opportunity there. But, we'll have to see how that goes. And the follow-on to that question from Fred was, what do we need to for these predictions to come true? And your answer was, we need training. I think that was a fair answer, and I think we still need training, honestly. I think there isn't enough training available for this, for what it takes to use this new model appropriately. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a cultural aspect to it. I think some organizations are ready to embrace it or kind of on that path. And an equal number, it's kind of not even on the roadmap or radar to really migrate their existing stuff to serverless. I think most people think it's cool, maybe some experimenting with it for a project here and there, but as a matter of policy or like in terms of like technical or IT strategy, I don't see that very often. So I think more training, and I think enabling people to understand the right ways to use serverless. I think a big piece of that is exactly what we were talking about earlier, which is kind of identifying those glue use cases.
Anyway, my answer to that question was, for mine, we need an industry growth in containers as a service and stronger container management offerings. I think that's still true. I don't think that's happened yet, as we've talked about. So I think maybe what's interesting here is, serverless didn't grow or didn't dominate as much as either of us thought it would in the short term. Is that a fair statement? I mean, it's obviously the hype is still there, but it didn't take over as much as either one of us thought it might, either positively or negatively.
I think despite a little bit of kind of eye rolling that's going on right now around the whole Kubernetes ecosystem, there's still plenty of very large companies out there in the middle of huge projects to move a ton of their infrastructure to Kubernetes clusters. And, I think 2 years ago, I would have thought that would have shifted more towards completely managed services.
ECS, and functions as a service. EK, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And one of the things I'm afraid of, and this is not really directly related to serverless, but we've talked about it a couple of times, and I think it's worth pursuing a little bit, is there is a huge backlash against Kubernetes. And frankly, Kubernetes is significantly more complicated than is needed for a lot of applications. What I'm afraid of is that the backlash against Kubernetes is going to be interpreted as a backlash against containers. And people need to realize that those two are two fundamentally different things. You know, containers win. Okay. Anything that's not a function as a service in the Lambda sense of that, containers, very few use cases where containers doesn't provide some level of benefit over not using containers. And so I think that's a pretty much, in my mind anyway, a one argument. But I think the question is, does that mean you need to manage the containers using something like Kubernetes? And there's a lot of debate on that. And there's a lot of people who think they should be, a lot of people who think they shouldn't be. And I think that's where the backlash is. I just hope we don't throw away the baby with the bathwater there. You know, I hope we don't, you know, take the backlash against Kubernetes and turn it into a backlash against containers. Do you have any thoughts on that? That mindset?
Or do you agree with that mindset? Maybe eventually ECS powered by Fargate. I mean, I think I'd like to see some usability improvements in Fargate and ECS.
Yes.
I think the fact that when you start up a new cluster, it still takes 12 minutes is kind of ridiculous. I mean, they might have gotten that number down, but I think ECS, Fargate, the Azure and Google Cloud, I think I've actually heard pretty good things about Google Cloud Run, which is, serverless containers as well. But, I think those services haven't at all played out at this point.
Yep. Yeah, it's, we have to keep remembering that, you know, cloud isn't AWS. It mostly is, but it is changing, and from a market share standpoint, it is starting to shift, and it is starting to shift more towards, you know, Microsoft is starting to play more of a major role. Google isn't quite there yet, but they're going to get there. They're going to figure it out, and they're going to start taking market share as well too. So while the market is going to obviously continue to grow, and AWS is going to continue to grow, from a market share standpoint, at least I hope this is going to be the case. We're going to see more players playing a larger percentage in the market share. And so I think, you know, the net result of that is some of the alternative offerings available from Google and Microsoft are going to get a lot more scrutiny, and some of the benefits of those, you know, there are, like you say, there are some offerings from Google that are much better than ECS, but you're not seeing them mainstream nearly as much just because of the overall size of the market and where the market is right now. But that'll change. That's especially going to change in Europe. As you well know, you know, we've talked about this before. In the United States here, it's AWS and everyone else, and maybe a little bit of Azure is creeping up there. In Europe, that's definitely not the case. You know, it's AWS and there's Azure and then it's Google. Azure is a much bigger player in Europe, and Azure is a much bigger player in Europe, and Google is a legitimate player of legitimate size in Europe. And AWS is not nearly as big as it is percentage-wise as it is in the US. Matter of fact, there's countries like Switzerland, which are now taking on, you know, cloud adoption much slower than the rest of the world, but they are taking it on in the financial industries in Switzerland. They're taking it on and they're starting to show through it, but they won't even touch AWS. It's just not even in the picture because AWS is not a player. It's Azure and to a lesser extent, Google. So, you know, that's going to happen in the rest of the world as well too. You know, these other players are going to become bigger, dominant players, and we're going to start seeing some of their services and comparing them a lot more favorably. And so maybe that's what it's going to have to take before we start seeing, you know, replacements for ECS that end up being easier to use and true containers as a service coming, and maybe some improvements to functions as a service as well. It's going to take some more competition.
Yeah, agreed. Should we do predictions for serverless in 2 years again? Okay. How about this? I think for me, I think we'll see, I think we'll see serverless outside of the IT department. I think there's some really interesting growing use cases with Microsoft Power Automate and all of these low code tools that either have the concept of function or are using these serverless functions. And I think that could be really compelling. So in short, business people using serverless.
I am right with you with that one. I completely agree with that. And I think that's a compelling use case, and that's a use case I think that's it's going to start gaining some traction. So I think you and I are right on the same page with that one. I do think, looking back at the other predictions. I do think the predictions that I had for 2020 are still going to happen. They're just going to happen a little bit slower. So I have a hard time voting against containers as a service as far as being the direction we're going to head. Whether it's going to be for 2022 or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I do think there's going to be, though, from the functions as a service standpoint, there is going to be some clarification, and that the use cases that it's going to be championed for are going to be the clarified use cases we've been talking about, and the general purpose use cases, which are, you know, the hype is drawing people to now, are going to start going away and aren't going to be focused anymore. So I think, you know, the hype curve is going to come down, but I think you're going to see these clarified use cases. And I think the quantity of those use cases are going to go up. Like you mentioned, the business use case is going to be a big one. It's going to grow. I think the IoT intake pipeline use case is going for functions as a service is going to grow, as well as the glue between software as a service offerings, piecing things together to build applications based on multiple services. That use case is going to grow. And I think the majority of use cases for functions as a service are going to fall under those categories. I'll throw the streaming video into the IFT use case. It's the same sort of a model there. And I think it's definitely going to be in that use case as well. Well, anyway, thank you, Clay. I want to close this out. Thank you very much for doing this interview. I really appreciate it. It's been, you know, I love when we work together. I love working with you, and I love having these debates just kind of together when, you know, just you and I talking. It's always great talking to you about these sorts of things. I hope we have a chance to do, some follow-on in this. Maybe in 2 years we'll come back and compare again where we were. And maybe we should do another segment like this talking about containers, specifically on containers. I don't know. We can talk about that offline. But I do want to thank you very much, and have a great day. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Lee.
Well, that's the end of the Great Serverless Debate Redux. I hope you enjoyed it and found it as educational and useful as I did. I'd like to once again thank Clay Smith for agreeing to appear on my show. All views expressed by Clay on this episode are his own and not those of his employer. If you don't know Clay, I strongly recommend you get to know him by following him on Twitter @SmithClay or LinkedIn @SmithClay. A link to both of these is contained in the show notes. I'd also like to stress that all views expressed in this episode, the redux of the original Great Serverless Debate, are the views of Clay and I personally, and not the views of the original Modern Software Podcast, their co-hosts, nor their sponsor. I'd also like to give a shout out to Frederick Paul, the creator of the Modern Software Podcast and the originator of the Great Serverless Debate concept, along with Tori Wilt, a developer advocate at New Relic and Fred's co-host for the show.
Thank you for listening to Modern Digital Applications with Lee Acheson. Lee helps executives keep up with industry trends and best practices in cloud computing, application scaling, DevOps, and applications modernization in order to stay in front of disruptive influencers. Subscribe to this podcast to ensure you get each new episode as it's available. Visit mdacast.com for all the resources and publications from Lee and his team. Thank you for tuning in to today's show.